Hello, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, The Global Agora. My name is Andrej Matyshak, and I work as the Deputy Head of Foreign Desk in Slovak Daily Pravda, which, by the way, means truth, and it's not Russian Pravda. I'm talking to Maria Avdyeva from Kharkiv from the beginning of the Russian full-scale invasion. She's a security expert, and I remember her telling me she wants to inform the world about what's going on in her country. This time we talk about how her city is constantly attacked, and if we can expect a Russian ground offensive against Kharkiv. Listen to our conversation. If you enjoy what I do, please support me on Ko-fi. For the link, see also a description of this episode. And now, up to the new debate.
As we speak, during the night shelling of Kharkiv by Russia, they saw at least 6 people died, some more were injured. And it seems the city is under almost constant Russian attacks these days. How would you describe the situation?
Right, the attacks are daily and they have especially intensified in recent weeks. The biggest impact and the toughest one for the city was when Russia massively attacked critical energy infrastructure with missiles and drones at the end of March. And since that, 2 Kharkiv biggest thermal power stations, which produce thermal heating and electricity, are out. So they are completely destroyed. And the mayor of the city says that it's not possible to restore them. So you have to build the new ones. And this means that the city where more than 1 million people live now is without electricity. Heating is not the problem at this moment, but it is a huge problem for the autumn and winter, which will come. So people are already thinking what they will do, or should they do something now? Because it seems that the city will not have heating at all, which is a huge problem. And then being without the electricity, well, you might think, for example, this is not a huge problem, but imagine a family living on the, say, 10th floor with kids or an elderly. They don't have electricity, means they can't cook anything because they have electricity stove. They can't go down because there is no elevator working. The city transportation is not working, meaning the trams and the metro stations. So this, and then the internet connection is dropping all the time. It's very difficult to get through to people in Kharkiv because when there is for a long period of time, the power outages, stations, the mobile station are working badly. So, and this all lasting for more than several weeks now creates a huge crisis for the city. And some people with whom I talk, they do not live at the moment, but they prepare. So they consider living if the situation is getting worse. And this is the Russian aim. So they know the consequences and they specifically target this infrastructure because they know that this will lead to the humanitarian crisis. So from what we see on the ground, it's unlikely that Russia will attempt to for the on-the-ground military operation on Kharkiv because they didn't succeed before and it looks they won't be able to make it successful now because they don't have enough people and enough strength to do that. But what they can do and what they do is they continue this terror for civilians because people are like really on the edge now because constant attacks, they don't allow them to live normally. And this gets very quickly into the psychological feeling and psychological stance of people. And this is Russia, what is aiming at.
Is this, I'd say, maybe the worst situation from the beginning of the full-scale invasion in Kharkiv?
I think that we can compare this because after the start of the full-scale invasion, when Kharkiv region was liberated, many people came back and now they come through this type of attacks for the second time. The situation is quite bad and also what Russia is using new, what they didn't do before, they use these gliding bombs. the scale of the usage was really high in the frontline areas, but now they use it for the city. And this was always very like terrifying moment that this will come. So this means that Russian fighter jets, they come up from the, like, for example, Morozovsk airfield, which Ukraine tries and actually successfully attacked several days ago. And then they throw this gliding bomb, so they don't have to fly into Ukrainian territory. They throw the bombs from the territory of Russia. And then these bombs, they hit the civilian infrastructure. And this is very indiscriminate. So they can like drop anywhere in the city, which creates an additional threat to civilians. And the attacks are also happening during the daytime. And also what Russia is using more comparable to the previous period, the double tap attack tactics. So they wait when the emergency services come on the scene of attack and attack again. And the 4 people were killed in this attack in Kharkiv. And yesterday in Zaporizhia, the same type of attack happened. So this is Russia is like using this time when the attention is distracted somewhere to increase the attacks on civilians in Ukraine.
Yeah, basically, this is a tactics of the terrorist, we can say, which is absolutely, absolutely horrible. And but they are doing this. But you said that people are thinking about leaving Kharkiv. On the other hand, I know, for example, that Kharkiv moved schools underground. So how is life? You know, are there services at least partly operating? You mentioned there's a problem with electricity. Are hospitals working and so on?
Because Ukraine was preparing for this, for the power outages, the critical facilities like hospitals and, I don't know, emergency services, they have power generators. So a lot of the scenes work on power generators. And in the city, you hear all the time this humming noise of the generators working. But for education, the situation is horrible. It was very bad before, because the schooling is only possible online for children in Kharkiv. The only existing school is underground metro school, but it is very limited. So imagine it's a city of 1 million people and the capacity of that metro school is, for example, up to 1,000 children. So it's it covers like 5% of all the children in the city. So everyone else was taken online education, which is not the best option in itself, but this is how the only possibility. And now with the electricity cut off, there is no school because children can't connect to the online lessons. And many of my friends who have school age children, they're struggling because parents can't get to work. They don't have a car because the transportation is not working. Children don't have this online schools. And everyone is somehow stuck, you know, trying to survive, trying to find the solution of how to cook food or, you know, do the laundry or whatever you need the electricity for. And the hardest thing is that this is not temporal. So this is not the situation when you think, okay, this will last for a week and then we will get back to normal. The attacks intensify and the power station are out of order, so they are not going to work soon. So this it's very unstable, and this is why people consider what they have to do if the situation persists in this way. So they are thinking of the plan B, especially those with children, where they can possibly move if it continues.
Maria, you said that you don't think Russians will try to occupy Kharkiv. They failed when attempting this at the beginning of the full-scale invasion. But are there any signs that they are concentrating the forces around the city?
There is some like information concerning Russia concentrating troops in Belgorod, and they also all the time for like almost half a year now continuing their offensive in the direction of Kupiansk, which is to the east of Kharkiv, just across the river where the Russian troops are now located. But Kharkiv is too big. To attack Kharkiv, Russia has to concentrate like 100,000 troops on the border, which will be visible, so they can't do it like in hiding. So the tactics might be that they will continue terrorizing the city especially civilians, and they will attack in the east, where the battle is already happening now in Donetsk region. We have seen the report that they are now close to Chasiv Yar, the city next to Bakhmut, and then there are other cities over there which might be the next targets for Russian offensive. So most possibly they will concentrate, because they cannot attack from two sides. This, for that they don't have the resources. Most possibly they will attack in the direction of in Donetsk region and like keep this terrorizing tactic around Kharkiv to create a humanitarian crisis, which will of course distract Ukrainian resources to solve.
Can we also talk a bit about what Ukrainian defense lines look like around Kharkiv? And maybe also, what do the defenders of the city need in terms of weapon systems?
After the territory of Kharkiv region was liberated, immediately after that, the army and defense forces started to build the lines of defense, like really good, solid defense lines that will help if Russia at the, because Putin is not doing anything in logically, right? So it's very, so logically they will not go for the like on the ground offensive on Kharkiv, but we have to be prepared for anything, because with him it's you can't like think what is logical or not. So Kharkiv is been preparing for that. They build this several lines of defense around the city and in other directions. But the situation for the city is not so like good or different from other cities, because it is so close to the border. It's 40 kilometers to the border with Russia. So you cannot put like really good air defense systems so close, because they will be an easy target for Russia, for Russian missiles. And this means that very limited number of air defense facilities can be used, like mobile groups that shut down Shahid drones. But for example, with Russian S-300 missiles, the only way of how to protect the city is to destroy them in the Russian territory, destroy the like airfields, military airfields in Russia from where Russian planes take off. So this will like also ease the situation for the city. And this is what Ukraine is doing. So using Ukrainian-made drones to hit military facilities inside Russia to somehow prevent them from attacking cities that lie near the front line, especially Kharkiv and Zaporizhia. This is the most important thing, the provision of weapons and ammunition for the air defense system. And this is what is like, the government of Ukraine is all the time asking for, because without that, Russia can, you know, attack more and more severely. But what we have already got from the partners is used very much, and it's like really helpful. For example, in today's attack, Russia launched 42 drones and 4 Shahid drones hit their targets. But then this is a very good rate, and for the missiles as well. So, but Russia constantly attacks from the air, and this means that they are depleting Ukrainian air defense capabilities. Then we need more ammunition to be able to shut down what Russia throws at Ukraine.
You mentioned that, and of course it's very obvious that Ukraine is trying to destroy the military facilities in Russia, especially the military facilities from which Russians can attack Kharkiv and other cities. So do you think that the West should be a little bit more courageous to give you more weapons that might also hit targets inside Russia? Because at this moment, it's a bit like you are trying to defend yourself, but maybe with one hand tied. Yes, we're helping Ukraine, but are we helping enough?
Well, this is a great question, and this is an existing ban for Ukraine to use the weapon that are provided by the partners to hit in Russia. The logic for this is that, like, not provoking Putin and not involving NATO in the war. But the people of Ukraine see it very differently, because we can't provoke Putin any more than he is already. So he is using everything they have to hit anywhere they can reach, all kinds of weapons. No like laws or humanitarian laws exist for Russia. So they do whatever they want. And you know, not being able to act back is bad for Ukraine, because this does not allow us to defend ourselves, and the right for self-defense is everywhere in the international law. So this would be a normal thing to do. And this is why Ukraine has to be adaptive and creative, and this is why all this drone production started to develop in Ukraine to allow hitting the targets inside Russia. But of course, if we, for example, imagine that Ukraine can use weapons, high-precise missiles provided by the partners to hit military targets inside Russia, this would be much more better because they are more high-precise. We do not target any civilian targets. We just hit the military facilities, and this undermines Russian possibilities for production and for offensive operations into Ukraine. But at the moment, this is not possible. So this kind of missiles Ukraine uses, I mean, the Western missiles Ukraine uses to targets in Crimea and in the occupied territories of Donetsk and Lugansk regions. And they are very effective there.
Maria, apologies for the probably apocalyptic question, but what would it mean for Ukraine if Kharkiv would fall?
Well, I don't think that this is a possible scenario because Russia was not able to capture any large Ukrainian city. What they have, after 2 years, they have occupied Bakhmut and Avdiivka, which are levered to the ground. Nothing exists there. So this is the Russian tactics to completely erase the city. We have seen it with Mariupol, and then only after that they can capture it, occupy the city. So with the city where like the number of population is comparable, for example, to Estonia, it's hard to imagine how they can do it. And I don't think that this is possible scenario. I think that it is a target for them, and it is like a target that they can easily attack now because it's so close to the border. But I don't see a possibility of when Russia will occupy it, because like, if just to give you a like idea or the listeners an idea, let's say Kupiansk, which is a small city to the east of Kharkiv, Russia is trying to, it was deoccupied, and Russia is trying to occupy it again over a year now, and still people are living there. They are not leaving the city, and Russia's attempts are failing. And this is like a very small city far from Kharkiv. So for the like huge city like Kharkiv, it's, I don't see a scenario where they can militarily occupy it. They will try to, you know, to bomb more, to throw more missiles, but I'm not sure that they will try an offensive operation.
And maybe even because this is such a huge city, they probably wouldn't be able to control it with so many people around who wouldn't welcome them because they are aggressors and occupiers.
When the invasion started initially, Kharkiv was, let's say, not prepared for that quite good. And they didn't succeed back then. For these 2 years, the city is much more prepared. It's much more better defended. So it's like turned into the fortress. And I don't see how and they can like try to do it, because Russia in during this war, they almost never used the tactics where they fight on the streets. So they try to leverage the city. So imagine what they have to do to that's the second largest Ukrainian city, just to bomb it out. It will like take them, I don't know, too much. And I don't think that they will ever go for it, especially taking into account that Putin and Russians were always claiming that this is a Russian-speaking city, which they want to liberate from the Nazi government in Kyiv, which was always a lie. So what then? Just to start killing civilians in the city they want to liberate? Yes, they can do it. We have seen it at Mariupol, but I don't think that it can happen with a such city as Kharkiv.
And one last thing, Maria. If you look at the broader battlefield, and you mentioned, for example, Chasiv-Yar, are you concerned that the Russians might move forward around Chasiv-Yar, again, other places? We see some reports that, you know, also about people are not that sure that if Ukrainians' defense lines will bend, if they might crumble. So if you look at the situation broadly on the battlefield, how much are you concerned?
About the eastern direction, I am quite concerned because, well, Ukraine was not building, from what I see, the several layers defense lines there in the east, because it was the territory which Ukraine wants to liberate, right? You don't build a defense line because then it means that you accept that all other territories are occupied. So the Ukrainian attempt was always to liberate more and more. So, and this is why defense lines there are not as good, for example, as around the cities. And Russia is truly like now concentrating all of their resources on that direction. And the next nearest cities are Kramatorsk and Konstantinivka, which are already under, and Pokrovsk, which are already under constant Russian attacks because the front line is moving closer. And so Ukraine will never, you know, let these cities, but we have to be very much aware that like Russia meter by meter is trying to move forward. And Ukraine is very much outgunned now. There is a lack of weapons and a lack of military personnel. So this creates the situation when Russia's offensive operation is like going slowly, but they are going forward. And Ukraine critically needs this aid package, the new aid package, which is stalled in the US, to stop this Russian offensive. Because when they call it a stalemate, this is not a stalemate. This is a constant offensive actions from Russia. And to stop them, to stabilize this line, Ukraine needs weapons like never before, because some units, they just don't have anything to fight back. And Russia is developing their military capabilities. So this is the situation where all help, which is possible, must come now immediately.
This was another episode of my podcast, The Global Agora. Subscribe, listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on the other platforms. If you enjoy what I do, please support me on Ko-fi. For the link, see also the description of this episode. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.